Good evening. I'm glad to be here. I've always liked Canada, and people are warm and friendly. The scenery is beautiful, and you know, I really enjoy it here, so I'm glad to be here. Okay, the New Age. Oh, yeah, you're very fortunate to live in Alberta. Very fortunate. Anyhow, the Invisible Denomination. How many of you have ever seen the first church of the New Age? You don't really see them, do you? In other words, they're not really around. And most people would think that this was, kind of an obscure, fringe, tiny kind of a movement that only oddball type people would be attracted to. But tonight we're going to see what it's really like. And that's why I call it the Invisible Denomination, because it's very sizable, but not many people are aware of it. In the early 90s, the University of California at Santa Barbara did a survey and found out that if the New Age was a denomination, like Methodist or whatever, it would be the third largest denomination in the United States. You know, Roman Catholic first, Southern Baptist second, and then the New Age would be third, and that was like 15 years ago. So it's gotten somewhat larger. As Larry's talk is a perfect, segue is the right word into mine, because, you know, we saw these individuals that were claiming to be God, right? And it's kind of silly, right? You know, that all these people would say they were gods. But we're going to look at how they came to view themselves that way. And what about the idea of graffiti being God? The graffiti on the building being God? Now, what do you think of that? So we're going to look at, this is a very crucial part of the talk here. Why do these people believe they're God, and why do they believe that the steam rising out of the pot is God? So we're going to look at this here, okay? Next one, please. Okay. That one is, yeah. Oh, is that the one on occultism? Okay, what is the New Age? The term itself is no longer really used. It was used quite widely in the 70s and then into the 80s a lot, but then it became kind of like outdated. It became kind of worn out, and so they just started using the word spirituality. And I don't want to use the word spirituality, so I call it what it used to be called. So people that advocate this aren't going to be using that term, but I use it because I'm a Christian. You know, I can't say that they're spiritual. You know, that just wouldn't be right. So I use it's like if somebody has long hair in the 1980s, you still call them a hippie, you know? Even though the term was, you know, first coined in the late 60s. I think you understand, right? So what is the movement we're talking about? The term New Age is taken from astrology. How many of you know about signs, you know, your astrological sign? In astrology, you know, it's broken up into astrological signs, you know, like back in the 70s, people used to ask, well, what's your sign, man, you know? And in occultism, see, occultism is very, most people don't even know what occultism is. They think it's like people in black robes and upside down crosses. But occultism is a real religion. I mean, it's quite an in-depth religion. And in occultism, they believe in what are called astrological ages, and each age lasts 2,000 years. And the reason they call it New Age is because we're coming out of the age of Pisces and heading into the age of Aquarius. So the term New Age is actually a reference to the Aquarian Age. And in the Aquarian Age, there's going to be a certain spiritual keynote. And that keynote is going to be the basis of what occultism believes and teaches. And okay, is that the... could you go back, please, to the first one? Yeah. Occultism is defined as the science of mystical evolution. It is the employment of the hidden... See, the word occult is Latin for hidden or kept secret. The employment of the hidden, i.e. occult mystical faculties of man to discern the hidden reality of nature, i.e. to see God as the all in all. And what we're dealing with here is not just, now you have to understand this. If you don't understand this, it's all just silliness. The New Age movement is about, it's not about people just believing something, like intellectually. Like when you go to school, your teacher tells you something and goes into your head and you believe it and that's it. It's about employment of the mystical faculties to perceive reality. Now, how do you do that? I mean, what are your mystical faculties? Okay, next one, please. This is the basis for all New Age spirituality. I have some quotes here. The term used is meditation. Now, I used to think, before 1984, I used to think meditation was thinking about things. You know, I used to see flyers for meditation, you know, in places, and I thought that, oh, that just meant that somebody's going to, you know, sit down and just think about their problems and just kind of, you know, dwell on them. You know, well, that's not New Age meditation. New Age meditation, this is some terms or some descriptions. Meditation is the doorway between worlds, the pathway between dimensions. Meditation is the key, the indispensable key to the highest states of awareness. Meditation is a key ingredient to metaphysics, that's going beyond the physical, as it is the single most important act in a metaphysician's life. Now, what exactly is that woman doing? Okay, there's basically two methods. The most prominent one is using a mantra. How many of you have heard the term mantra? Okay, a mantra, the word mantra, is two Hindu words which means to be liberated from thought. To be liberated from thought. In other words, you go into a trance, you go into an altered state of consciousness. And you do that by basically saying the same thing over and over again. And that can be anything. It can be religious, it can be secular. But you just say the same thing continuously. And I don't know if you've ever done this, but if you've ever said a word more than you normally do, it ceases having that connection and becomes a sound. It just becomes a sound, you know. And that's what a mantra becomes after, you know, a few minutes. It's just like a sound and you're just focusing on it, and then pretty soon you can't think anymore. Your mind actually gets plugged, you know, dammed like a stream, you know. If you put a dam there, it stops. And that's what meditation does. It creates the silence. That's a term used quite often, is the silence. And then once you're in the silence, then this divine energy comes down and flows into you, and that's called higher consciousness or the superconscious, or in Hinduism, samadhi. In other words, you connect with a supernatural power, that's which they believe is God. And that's why, you know, in the earlier talk, these people had that experience. Now, again, even though I've explained it, you may think this is silly, you know, or even mentally ill. People that are not mystics, when they hear about these practices, they think, well, this sounds really, you know, like they're nuts. But I want you to write this down. If you have pen and paper, there's two reasons why there's, you know, an actual contact being made. If it was just their imagination, everybody would come up with something different, right? I mean, if there was no outside party that intervened, everybody would come up with, you know, just something out of their imagination. So the first one is uniformity. Uniformity. Next one, please. Yes. From every culture, religion, and race, the mystical experience has a recurring pattern. The core experiences are often indistinguishable from each other. So in other words, there's uniformity. I mean, people, no matter where you are, what culture you're in, you're going to have the same experience. Okay, next one, please. The second one is continuity. The classical experience of enlightenment as described by Buddhist monks, Hindu gurus, Christian mystics, Aboriginal shamans, Sufi sheikhs, and Hebrew Kabbalists is characterized by two universal elements, radiant light and an experience of oneness with creation. And that oneness with creation is, you know, the same as oneness with God. The idea is that God, that's what I meant by graffiti, or the graffiti on the building is God. people that go into these altered states and have this connection with this supernatural force believe that they are God and everybody is God and everything is God, that all creation is God. And they don't just think it, they experience it. So you have to understand this. You're not going to believe your God unless you feel like your God. You know, if it's just intellectual, you know, it wouldn't have any punch to it. But it's mystical. And we're going to look at some of the ways that Western society... Okay, next, please. Yes, how popular has it become? Well, like I said, it's not really called that anymore. It's just known as spirituality. And it's becoming more and more accepted in Western society all the time. Next one, please. Okay, this is a magazine that was put out in the States by Good Housekeeping. Good Housekeeping, of all things. And it's supposed to represent, you know, mainstream spirituality. You know, notice, you know, put your family first, 8 prayers every woman needs now, 22 gifts of faith. And it sounds kind of Christian, doesn't it? Okay, we're going to see a picture of an article that was in this magazine. Next one, please. So notice, I don't know if you can see it, but the word mantra is used right there. Can you all see it? So in other words, a magazine on faith, Faith and Spirit, put out by Good Housekeeping, has mantra meditation as, you know, part of mainstream faith. Okay, next one. Okay, Robert C. Fuller is a professor, and he wrote a book called Spiritual But Not Religious. How many of you have heard that term? How many have had people that have told you they're spiritual but not religious? Okay, generally when they say that, more often than not, they're involved in New Age spirituality, because that's a very common term, and that's what this book is about, is, you know, they don't go to church, they don't really believe in anything doctrinal, but they have spiritual experiences. Okay, next one. Okay, Dr. Fuller wrote, over the past decade, bookstores have emerged as the most important centers of unchurched spirituality. So they don't really go to... That's why I call this the invisible denomination. They don't go to churches. See, originally Christianity was people meeting in other people's houses. Most of you are probably aware of that. And then when it became the state religion, you had to have kind of like official buildings, you know, and as the Roman Catholic Church evolved, you had to go to a church to receive, you know, Mass. And so this is where... you know, the idea of originally the church was people, not a building. Amen. You know, and then it became kind of a, you know, in Europe, the culture and the church, in the Middle Ages, you know, kind of meshed together. So in unchurched spirituality, you don't need to go to a church because you meditate. I mean, why do you have to go to a church to meditate? You just can stay in your house and do that, right? So this is called unchurched spirituality. And most of you understand the law of the market. How many of you are in the business world? Okay, you understand the law of the market. You know, if you don't have a market, you can't sell it, right? So I gauge a lot of what I do, my research on the law of the market. Okay, down in the States, there's a chain called Borders, and they're all over the place. I mean, there's 5 in Portland alone, and they're, you know, huge. I mean, huge. And in most cases, the New Age, it's called metaphysical, the New Age section will be 60 to 80 shelves devoted to New Age spirituality. Sometimes right on par with Christianity, and sometimes, you know, it can be 10, 20 shelves over the one devoted to Christianity. So, you know, going by the law of the market, you know, huge numbers of people are buying books on this. And some of these books are quite alarming. Okay, next one. Okay, did you know that there's a publishing company that is devoted only to books on witchcraft? It's called Llewellyn, and they're out of St. Paul, Minnesota. I got a hold of their catalog, and I could only get the top part on it. See that one there, Wicca for the Solitaire? This one right here. That's for people that don't want to join a coven. They can just do it on their own. Anyhow, this is at the front of their catalog, and they had their 36 top best-selling titles. You know, we're talking 36 titles here. That's not really a lot, is it? Anyhow, these 36 top titles had sold 7 million copies. 7 million copies, and I got the catalog in 99, and most of these books had only been out, you know, since the early 90s. You know, 7 million copies. And there's this one of their authors is a witch named Silver Ravenwolf. That's her witch name. That's not a real name. And her books alone have sold over 1 million copies. Like one is called The Ride of Silver Broomstick, over 300,000 sold. The Solitary Witch, 200,000 sold. And one dedicated just to teenagers called Teen Witch with 200,000 sold. You know, so this is what Fuller meant by, you know, it's more or less people buying books like this on their own and reading them and doing meditation in their own house. Okay, next one, please. You know, people could say, well, you know, witchcraft, you know, that would appeal to like teenagers who wear black and have spiky hair and, you know, are goth looking, right? Well, even respected, you know, traditional religions are becoming very much enamored with New Age spirituality. Next one. Okay, this is from a book called New Age Judaism. And I'm going to try to save my voice so you can read the... I have a chronic cough. So she talks about... you know, there are many teachers doing this in the Jewish world, and Judaism is undergoing an exciting renaissance, and Jewish religious organizations are responding to pressure to bring forth mystical teachings, and, you know, classes are being offered. You know, you can all read that, right? Okay, next one, please. Okay, the business world is really buying into this. This is from a major magazine called U.S. News and World Report from 1999, and the title is, The Guy in the Cubicle is Meditating. Spirituality is the latest corporate buzzword. And it talks about 2,000 global power brokers meeting in Davos, Switzerland to talk about the future of meditation, and corporate America is in the midst of a Damascus conversion. And in a more recent book, it claims that 100,000 business executives from 56 countries have taken meditation courses. You know, over, and that's not workers, that's or employees, that's executives. You know, so from 56 countries, so it's, you know, the view is that they can tap into their higher self, they'll be able to be better businessmen. Okay, next one, please. Okay, this one is one that could probably really hit close to home. And, you know, of course, we're talking about yoga here, and Larry mentioned yoga. And yoga has literally swept the entire Western world, especially since the early 90s. There was like, in the U.S. in 1990, there were 2 million people who practiced yoga, and now there's 20 million. And I saw before I came up here that there were 70,000 yoga teachers alone in the U.S. And I looked in the yellow pages for Calgary, and there are 27 yoga studios in Calgary, which is quite a few, and that doesn't include it, like fitness centers and gyms and colleges and things like that. A lot of colleges really are big into yoga. So how many of you know what yoga means? Probably not very many, huh? Okay, the word yoga means union. It means union. It means to be linked or yoked with your higher self. And a lot of people may think that, you know, it's just stretching. You know, that yoga just means stretching. Well, those are called asanas. Asanas, and they mean, you know, like postures. And the reason they do these postures is so they can get limber, so they can meditate. You know, the real essence of yoga is meditation. So they do all these contortions so that they can meditate without having their back bother them. But the core of yoga, the essence of it, is spiritual. You know, to be linked through meditation with higher consciousness, or samadhi, it's called. Okay, next one, please. Hey, this is Time Magazine. Talks about the science of yoga. The science of yoga. So in other words, it's not really religion, it's a science. And in that article, there's a picture. Next one, please. Okay, we're gonna look at what the science of yoga actually is, and what other spiritualities parallel it. And I think you might be surprised. Okay, there's shows a figure, and then it shows, I don't know if you can see this, but one of the main concepts of yoga is the concept that there are these chakras that go up and down the spine. They're not physical. They're not like your spleen or anything. They're on some other level. And when you meditate, this serpent energy or kundalini energy goes shooting up the spine and activates these chakras. Now, the top ones are the ones that we're concerned with because they're spiritual in nature. There's one called the third eye, which is right here. I don't believe there are chakras, but this is what they experience. And when the third eye one opens, you have psychic powers. You know, you're basically, like a psychic, you know, somebody who, has supernatural abilities. But the one that we would be most concerned with is the seventh one, which is supposedly up here, and it's called the crown chakra. And when that opens, then you know you're divine. You know you're divine. As I said earlier, you know, these people don't just believe they're divine. They actually have the experience of being divine, or what they think is divine. And yoga is the very essence of this, the very essence. In other words, yoga means to be yoked or linked with the divine, okay, through the chakra system. Okay, next one, please. Now, how many of you have any friends or relatives that are involved with yoga? Well, quite a few. You know, like I said, there's 27 yoga centers in Calgary, and each one probably trains hundreds every year, maybe some thousands. Some could train several thousands because they have, you know, a lot of classes and large classes. And if, say, you had some son, daughter, friend, relative, I mean, somebody in your circle, coworker, and they were going to take yoga classes, and you said, no, this would be spiritually dangerous, you know, they think you were crazy, right? By the way, how many of you have family members or friends or coworkers who kind of think you're crazy just for believing what you do about, you know, this being the last days or the end of the age? Yeah, that's what I thought. And they probably mock you and say, oh, you're going on with that again. Well, we're going to compare the Time Magazine picture with the chakras with this book. We're going to go to another book here. And that picture you see is from the book you're going to see in a little bit. And you see the same thing. You see these chakras, right? Well, I have a challenge. You should write this down. I'd like you to write this down. This is a pivotal part of the seminar or the conference here, because anybody can check this out, even online. But if you go to any bookstore and find the fitness section, and there's, you know, lots of books on yoga. And in these books on yoga and the fitness section, we're not talking about the religion section, we're talking about the fitness section, you'll find, you know, most of them will have references to the chakras, kundalini, meditation, you know, things like that. 80-90% of them, you'll find the word chakras. I mean, it'll be part and parcel of yoga. So here's a book that has chakras. And the following two quotes are from that book. Next one, please. Okay. Of all the techniques of advancement in the psychic and spiritual fields, meditation is by far the most effective. And that is at the heart of yoga. You know, meditation is, I suppose there's some classes where you just get the, the stretching. But most yoga, if not all yoga teachers, have been trained by gurus. You know, have been trained by Hindu-oriented organizations. And I should tell you this. At the beginning or end or both of every yoga class, the teacher says, Namaste, Namaste. And that means the God in me bows down to the God in you. And that would even be something you'd find in like a fitness club or a gym. Okay, next one, please. Okay, is that the one I... Okay, in meditation, the mysterious psychic energy can be sent up through these centers. That's the chakras. This very potent force is called the kundalini or serpent power. And let me reiterate that in, these books that you would see at a fitness section on yoga, they would talk about kundalini. I mean, most of them would. And if you ask any yoga teacher, well, let me finish here. As this mighty force begins to flow within you, these vital psychic centers, the chakras, begin to open in successive order. It opens up the channel to your higher self. So like I said, if you went to any yoga teacher or any books, you would find the same thing, the chakras, kundalini, meditation. So now we're going to see where these quotes and this figure here, the chakras came from. So in essence, yoga and witchcraft, in the spiritual sense, are identical as far as the ultimate objective. Witchcraft is also based on the chakras, and the kundalini energy and the higher self. And I should bring this out. In the third Harry Potter book, The Prisoner of Azkaban, I think it's called, in one of the classes, now I know it's all fiction, the characters, but one of his teachers makes reference to, the inner eye, which is the third eye chakra, the sixth chakra, and also to the superconscious. And that's a term found in this book, The Complete Book of Witchcraft. So in the third Harry Potter book, you can find the same reference to God, the God the witches worship, to what one finds in this book, the superconscious, which is the area that is, the realm that is entered in meditation. I thought that was kind of interesting because people say, the Harry Potter books are just, make-believe, they're just fiction, there's nothing in them that's, a Christian would find offensive. Well, it's just like the Wizard of Oz. Well, in the Wizard of Oz, you don't have the Wicked Witch of the West talking about the inner eye and the superconscious. You see my point? Wouldn't you agree with me? Okay, next one, please. So, I don't know if you've realized this, but a lot of stress reduction techniques are based on meditation. And a lot of doctors prescribe meditation to their patients for headaches and, insomnia and, a wide list of maladies. And this was in Time magazine a few years ago, 2004, I think it was. And it says, by the way, that's a Hollywood actress on the cover there. It says, New Age mumbo jumbo, not for millions of Americans who meditate for health and well-being. And I'm sure that if you tried to warn somebody who was told to meditate for stress reduction, they'd think you were, out of your mind, right? But I've studied this. Even if you meditate just for stress reduction, even if you don't meditate, to get in touch with your higher self, even if you don't meditate, to reach higher consciousness, this is what I found out. Okay, next one, please. Okay, this Marty Kaplan was an atheist Jew. He was some kind of screenwriter in Hollywood, and this was in, I think, Newsweek magazine. And he wrote an article called, they did an article on meditation for stress reduction, and he wrote a sub-article, it was called Ambushed by Spirituality. He says, I got more from mind-body medicine than I bargained for. I got religion. You don't have to believe in anything. All you have to do is do it. That's meditation. Unwittingly, I was engaged in a practice that had been at the heart of religious mysticism for millenniums.
It, meditation, is known to every mystic tradition.
So in the article, he was, you know, biting his, was he biting his nails? He was grinding his teeth. He was grinding his teeth. You know, he's an atheist, you know, a secular person. He's grinding his teeth, his doctor. So you need meditation. So he started doing it. And this is what happened. He got ambushed by spirituality. He got more than he bargained for. Okay, next one, please. Okay, another one. This was a guy in the business world named John Randolph Price. He did meditation for stress reduction. He says meditation was a way to attain peace of mind and reduce stress in a corporate environment. And the booklet he got it from was put out by the American Management Association. How many of you heard of that? It's just a conglomeration of corporations, you know, managers. And they put out this totally secular booklet on meditation. And so John Randolph Price started doing it. And he says, so I decided to try it. I discovered how to come into a new sphere of consciousness. And here's the key. If there's one thing I want you to get tonight, there's one thing I want you to go home with, is this. You move into a realm you may not have even known existed. You move into a realm you may not have even known existed. And the following pictures will show. Next one, please. Okay, this is from Newsweek magazine. And that's a magazine down in the States. And I get most of my information from these kind of publications. And God and health. Is religion good medicine? And, you know, it's about God. It's about health. But in it, we find the following pictures. Okay, next one, please. Okay, this guy's a business executive. He's meditating at the Om Spa for your spirit. You know, and this is exactly the kind of meditation one would do in yoga or Wicca or any type of New Age type spirituality. You just repeat a mantra, you focus on your breath, and someone could say, well, you know, he's just a businessman, and they're not really he-man types. Okay, next one, please. Okay, the whole fire department here in this one town is meditating, because, you know, fighting fires is very stressful. So someone came in and taught them how to meditate, you know, the whole team there. So they're engaging in this kind of, you know, family men. Last guys you'd ever think would go for anything like this, right? These guys, they like to, you know, watch football and drink beer. And, you know, they would never join a cult. No way, you know, not in a million years. But, you know, look at them. I mean, they're doing the same thing you'd get in a cult. Okay, next one. The next one is really heartbreaking. Okay, I think that speaks for itself. Okay, next one, please. Okay, now things are really going to get weird. This is where it starts to get kind of bizarre. A lot of activities that the New Age engages in are so-called healing methods, you know, healing. And this particular, I got this out of a magazine on Reiki. How many have heard of Reiki? Oh, quite a few. Well, anyhow, Reiki is a Japanese word, and it means, and it's translated in the West as universal life energy. But that's not really what it means. It's in Japan, Reiki is the generic word for the occult. And it can also, in Japanese, it can also be translated as ghost energy. And what it is, this is why you need to know about this for the sake of your loved ones and your family members. Because what it is there's three levels. First level is you just do it on someone. You just place your hand. It's not massage. You don't rub anybody. You place your hands. First you go to the Reiki master. That's the third level. And they initiate you into it over the weekend. You don't learn it. You're initiated into it. And then, you know, you have one woman found out after she came back from being initiated into it, her cat was afraid of her. So the first level is you can do it on people. Second level, you can do it on people. This is weird. This is really weird, folks. The second level, I was told this woman in London did it on her father in New Zealand. The second level, you can send it anywhere in the world and do it on people. You know? And then the third level is when you're a master and you can initiate others. And you may think, you know, I'm one guy where I work, you know, when I tell him about this, energy doesn't really come out of their hands. Yeah, it does. And he never talked to me after that. But, you know, Reiki is truly a really, really unusual practice. And, you know, there were some Reiki channelers, there were just some. You know, it wouldn't be that bad, right? If there were just some. But in one Reiki publication in the United States, there are now over 1 million Reiki channelers. Okay? In Great Britain, let me see. Oh, I forgot to. This is McLean's magazine on a few years ago on Canadians going for New Age spirituality. I didn't put it on the PowerPoint because I just found it. You know, but it was too late, but it's called Soul Searchers, Turned Off by Organized Religion, Looking for Inner Peace, and it shows this woman meditating on the cover. And basically it says, many Canadians are embracing Eastern spirituality, often beginning with a simple yoga class. So, you know, it's very potent in Canada, too. Okay, this is from Great Britain. This is a Reiki master, and he says that in the early to mid-1990s, Reiki was pretty much an unknown word in the UK. There were few books on Reiki in the major stores, and it had yet to be discovered in a meaningful way. From the year 2002, it would be difficult to find a village in the British Isles where there was not a number of Reiki practitioners. There had been an enormous proliferation, and it has been written about in all manner of publications, including the national press. Okay. When you got to promise me you won't give anybody here any trouble. I mean, in the hotel, but when they checked me in last night, they had a sign. It's gone now for some strange reason. It's gone, but there was a sign that said on-site wellness, and one of the things they offered here was Reiki. So we're in a Reiki hotel. And I talked to the woman this morning about it, and she said, oh yeah, they'll come right to your room. It's very popular. So this very hotel has some Reiki practitioner that does it on people here. Okay, Reiki is based on the same thing that yoga is. Reiki is based on the chakra system. That's what's activated when you go to a Reiki master, is the chakra system. That's where this energy comes from. Okay, next. This is Reiki News Magazine, and the man in the middle here, right there, he's Reiki is supposed to come from Tibetan Buddhism, but he was a Japanese man, Dr. Usui. He wanted to heal, so he went up on top of a sacred mountain in Japan and meditated for like a week or so. And this light hit him right in the forehead, right in the third eye chakra. And when he came off the mountain, he had the Reiki energy in him. And so he started, mainly it was found in Japan. And then he initiated a number of people, and one of them was a woman named Takata. And she came to North America and started initiating American and Canadian Reiki masters. And I think she only initiated 22 in the 1970s. And now, you know, like I said, there's over 1 million in the U.S. and probably tens of thousands in Canada. And like I said, this hotel offers Reiki as a service. So, you know, for Christians, since this is becoming another thing that's becoming mainstream, for Christians, what's the meaning of this? Okay, next one, please. This is from the Reiki News. During every attunement ceremony, I'm always aware of the presence of my Reiki guides. You know, the Reiki guides. Next one, please. Imagine my surprise during my first Reiki class when I observed the astral images of guides and healing spirits
pouring forth bright shimmering rays of healing energy at the hands of novice practitioners. Okay, so are you starting to get the picture here? See, Reiki is not like something scientific. It's not like, you know, you're actually massaging muscles or something physical is being done. It's supernatural. Okay, next one, please. Reiki once belonged to everyone. The Reiki guides wanted to be so again. So the way it's going in the Western world, and I think there's over 1 million Reiki channelers in Germany, you know, in Germany, in Holland, and, you know, there's Reiki all over the world. There's millions of Reiki channelers all over the world. It's like a big movement. And again, they tell you it's not religious, it's just spiritual. You know, oh no, Reiki's not a religion, it's for healing. See, what makes Reiki so important in this situation is that it's not like you just go to some building and hear somebody speak. Reiki is something you do on others. See, if a person is initiated into Reiki and takes a Reiki class, then they go out and start doing it on friends, relatives, family members. And I've seen this, you know, if somebody has a headache, say you're at a family gathering and you have like a niece, nephew, brother, sister, like where I work, there's this guy, his sister's a Reiki channeler, and he doesn't even know, you know, the ramifications of it. And if you try to tell him, oh, come on, you know, no, guides, oh, no way. But the thing is, I mean, I felt Reiki myself. You know, and it wasn't psychosomatic because I didn't know the person was a Reiki channeler. And other people I've talked to have experienced it, and they say that this heat comes out of their hands, and you know, it's very very powerful. It's something you can feel, and you know, many people find it very you know, pleasurable when they get Reiki, and. This is something, it's like evangelization by healing. And you don't have to, it's not like a cult where they come and try to convince you that, you know, you have to believe these certain doctrines. You know, all you have to do is have a headache or, a backache, and, you know, they'll come up and do it on you. And then, you know, you're having this energy pour into you that's not from God. Okay, the next one, please. And you can read it yourself. So you can ask, somebody could actually, you know, Reiki a teddy bear and then give it to some, you know, 8 or 5 or 6 year old kid, and it would have an effect. Remember what the Apostle Paul wrote, in the last days, perilous times shall come. Okay, next one, please. Okay, this man is the Billy Graham of the New Age movement. His name is Dr. Wayne Dyer, and he has sold 50 million books. 50 million books, and they're all on that we all have this higher consciousness. One is called Your Sacred Self. They're all in meditation. They're all on the higher self. They're all on, you know, what you've been seeing here, yoga, basically yoga, but it's kind of a secularized yoga. You know, it's kind of... you don't have to join any particular religion. You can just buy his books and tapes and meditate, and then, you know, you're on your way. And he talks about how these higher energies come down and possess him when he's writing his books. And he's really popular in the United States. There's something called public television in the U.S. Most of it's commercial. And I better move along here. But they have these pledge drives because you have to give money, you know, to public television. And they always bring him out, and he's like on for a whole night. And he's very charismatic. I mean, not in the like the Pentecostal sense, but he's very charismatic, like, you know, in the movie star sense. He's, you know, really, really good at what he does. And people just eat up his words. And he's one of the persons that's changing this view of spirituality from traditional to New Age. Next one, please. I think we may make it. Okay, this is probably, this woman's probably equal. This is Oprah Winfrey. Okay, in the 1980s, Oprah Winfrey read a book by a Unity minister named Eric Butterworth. It was called Discover the Power Within You. And Eric Butterworth, hope it doesn't keep doing that. And Eric Butterworth, it was a New Ager, and he had this view of, like we've been talking about, there's many different aspects of New Age spirituality, but it's all basically the same. You have to meditate, empty your mind through repetition. The higher self fills the void, and then you're guided and directed by your divine self. But anyhow, Oprah has really, really pulled off a major coup for the New Age here in the last few months. Ever since the early 90s, she's had a steady stream of New Age people on her show. Marianne Williamson, Deepak Chopra, Gary Zukav. How many of you ever watched the Oprah show and seen any of these people on there? Like Gary Zukav gives me the creeps. You know, he definitely has company. He definitely has company. And there's others, a woman named Ilyanya Van Zandt and a few others, lesser known. Okay, next one, please. Does this ring a bell with anyone? Okay, Oprah has had devoted 2 weeks in a row to this book. It's called The Secret, and there's also a DVD. And I tell you, it exploded. For the first time in 21 years, I got the impression that the New Age was really gaining ascendancy. I went to 3 bookstores in late February, and one said that they couldn't keep it in the store. These are big bookstores. I think it would be the equivalent of Kohl's here, right? Second one said they alone had sold hundreds. And then the third one, they got 100 in, and just within a day, they were down to 27. And I thought, wow, I've never seen anything like this before. The Secret is basically about the law of attraction, that whatever your mindset is, you cause to happen, either good or bad. That, if you think, it's not positive thinking, it's whatever you think. If somebody gets in a plane crash, it's because they were afraid of getting in a plane crash. if you get beaten up by, if you're an abused wife, your husband beats you up, it's because you thought about him beating you up, so it actually sent out vibrations into the universe, and they responded to your thoughts. In other words, just thinking about not wanting to get beat up caused you to get beat up. So it's not just positive, it's also negative. That's kind of hard to understand. But so the secret is that if you only proclaim, it's kind of like the word faith movement. It's kind of like a New Age version of the word faith movement. But it's really caught on all over the Western world. Okay, next one. Hey, this is the woman that put The Secret together. Her name's Rhonda Byrne. And in The Secret, she says, you are the power of the universe. You are a unique manifestation of God. The same thing that Larry talked about, that every human being, everything that exists is a manifestation of God. And you are the power, you are the creator. No, that's it. You are a creator of the universe, that you create whatever you want. And she got this from a couple named Jerry and Esther Hicks. And Jerry and Esther Hicks were just normal people. And Esther Hicks learned meditation, focusing on her breath for 15 minutes each day. And then after 9 months, she became possessed. And these spirit guides started speaking through her, and they called themselves Abraham. They were legion. There were many. And they said, we are Abraham. It's like something out of a horror movie or something. Well, Jerry and Esther Hicks became big figures in the New Age movement. Abraham, their spirit guides. And Rhonda Byrne was one of their disciples. And so she was some kind of television producer in Australia. And she knew how to market things on television or through the media. So she put together The Secret, and it just took off. It just exploded. And if you look in the front of The Secret, you find that she thanks Jerry and Esther Hicks and Abraham, you know, for giving her this. So when you see Rhonda Byrne there, you're really looking at the teachings of Abraham. So what does this mean to us? What does this mean to, you know, you and your family members and friends? Well, I think it's quite obvious. Remember what Paul said? The Spirit speaketh expressly in the latter times. Some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. And I believe that yoga, Reiki, Wicca, the secret, you know, all these things we've been looking at are doctrines of devils. You know, and notice the word seducing. You know, seducing means you don't know you're, you know, to be seduced means to be tricked. In other words, you don't really know that you think you're getting God. You think this is the way to go. You know, you think this is, you know, legitimate, but it's not, you know, seducing spirits. So I'm going to end with Leviticus 19:31. This is the verse that really I stand on, because people can say, Oprah's really a nice person. You know, you shouldn't bash her, you know, or you've probably heard that before. You know, well, I'm not really bashing people, but I'd like them to know this, that, you know, in the Jewish scriptures, Leviticus 19:31 says, well, you want to turn to it, I'll give you time to turn to it. And I think this is what we're dealing with, you know, in this mystical movement, which I call New Age, but now is just known as unchurched spirituality. I still hear pages turning. Leviticus 19:31. I'll wait till I don't hear any pages turning anymore, because it's always good to read for yourself. Regard not them that have familiar spirits. And I believe Rhonda Byrne has familiar spirits. I mean, take a look at her. Regard not them that have familiar spirits, neither seek after wizards to be defiled by them. Now, I believe Reiki channelers are wizards. You know, I believe that people that have psychic powers, that's what the word wizard means. It means knowing one, a knowing one. You know, someone that has knowledge of supernatural worlds. And of course, familiar spirits is, you know, another term for, you know, the demonic realm. To be defiled by them, and I believe the word defiled here, I think I looked it up, and it means to be corrupted. To be corrupted, and then you find out why. Rhonda Byrne says, you are the creator of the universe. And then Leviticus 19:31 says, I am the Lord your God. So, I believe that it couldn't be any clearer. It couldn't be any more black and white, you know, any more concise. You know, I am the Lord your God. Rhonda Byrne is the great, or is the creator of the universe. And not just her, but everybody you know, you know, everybody you know is the creator of the universe. You know, you are the creator of the universe. Your cat and dog is the creator of the universe. And she doesn't just think that. Like I said, I can't emphasize this enough. And this is the point I've been trying to get across. She doesn't just think that. She has been taken over by something that makes her think that way. She believes she's God because she feels like she's God. And if you can understand that, you can understand what's kept me researching this movement for 21 years. Anyhow, good night.